Welcome to a special episode of Random Movie Generator with myself, David Jeffrey Earl, and
David Nicholas, full of excitement, Edwards, full of excited energy and electricity.
Are you excited?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, Peter's Friends is a big, big deal, and you know, that was very much the clique crowd of the time, wasn't it? You know, Kenneth Branagh, Stephen Fry.
So we've got Alex Lowe on today, by the way, who's in Peter's Friend, the movie Peter's Friends.
Absolutely, he was there rubbing shoulders with the big comedy giants of the '80s, and they're still big
Jugs.
Iconic figures now, Big Jugs. Absolutely pushing past the Big Jugs in the big cinematic universe, and also cinema was very different back then. You know, the idea of being in a movie in your early 20s, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd be up for a movie now, but we didn't have these streaming sites, you know, taking away the focus from cinema. When you were in a movie during the early 90s, it was a big old deal, wasn't it? You were being almost turned into a saint, you know, God, turned into a bit of a god on the silver screen.
Where would Peter's Friends end up now, David, if it came out now?
Straight on, properly, I imagine, Apple.
Do you think? Do you think so?
Yeah, it would not be. Do you know, it might. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, unfortunately so. I mean, you know, who are the big comedians now that have got that much power within the UK? It really has shifted focus. I mean, you had Phoebe Waller-Bridge with Fleabag. That's very much a one-off. Who is the new quirk, the group, the circle of comedians these days? You know, who's on? You know, Steve Coogan and Patrick Marr, but that was one era. But that circle doesn't seem to exist to the same extent.
Maybe it does. Maybe too old now to notice.
Maybe I've not got my finger on the TikTok, Instagram pulse, and I don't know what's going on. But I think if that circle does exist, they would be basically tempted over to the streamers anyway. Because I think comedy, romantic comedy, most mainstream comedy or comedy dramas, they're more TV based. I reckon Peter's Friends would be a prestige drama on Apple Plus or HBO now.
When was the last time you watched it?
The last time I watched it was literally a few days ago.
Oh right, because I haven't seen it for probably 3 or 4 years. So
it was one of those bizarre ones whereby I thought it was going to be like watching a film from fresh, but at the beginning of every scene, I remembered every bit of dialogue. It really nested itself in my memory more than I thought.
Like what sort of bird?
Like a little chaffinch who had wandered into my ear and had nested on my frontal lobes, basically. And yeah, like a chaffinch, I think. Or like a loud crow, but not in a bad way. You know what I mean? Just echoing through my brain through a memory corridor of pop culture.
Oh, who wrote the bugger?
The person who wrote it was the female American comedian who's married to Kenneth Branagh in the film.
Yes, yes.
She wrote it with another chap who she went on to write other... don't think she did any other film scripts, but she worked in TV after that. I wonder if I have her name in front of me.
We should know this, shouldn't we?
Really? I know, this is a...
Rita Rudner and Martin Bergman.
Absolutely. There we go. Do you know what? I need to get International Movie Database up ASAP.
Oh, my God. She's 70 now.
Oh, she would have been, because I think she was like, she looked quite sort of in her 40s during the actual film. Because she was an aging star, wasn't she, that was very worried about her weight.
Right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
But yeah, she wrote it and Kenneth Branagh directed it. Kenneth Branagh would have been so young, wasn't it? It's 1992. And after that, Kenneth Branagh went on to obviously do some big films. He did Frankenstein, Robert De Niro.
He was 32.
Blimey. There you go. Let's get the stars up. Emma Thompson, Hugh Laurie. It really was the whole kind of Cambridge footlights elite, wasn't it, that were coming together to make this film.
Stephen Fry, Kenneth Branagh, Hugh Laurie, Imelda Staunton, Emma Thompson, Tony Slattery.
And obviously Mr. Alex Lowe.
And Alex Lowe, yeah, sorry. Richard Briers is Lord Morton. Richard Briers is in it.
I didn't remember that. I didn't remember that at all. Boy George. Oh, that's in archive footage. No, that's archive footage, thank God. I was going to think, flipping it, that must be the director's cut. Do you know what? I watched a bizarre edit of the film, and I wonder if I can talk to Alex about it, whereby, in my mind, I remember Emma Watson trying to seduce him.
Emma Thompson.
Emma Thompson, Dave. Let's get that right before you actually start interacting with the man himself. You know, get the surnames right. It's not Harry Potter. Let's not disappoint
you. You know Alex's second name?
Lowe. L-O-W.
Not Loke. Alex Loke.
Oh, Loke.
Yeah.
It's Loke. No. L-O-W-E.
Alex. Loke. It's Alec Loke. No, it's Alex Lowe.
Oh, thank God. I'd have gone with anything. I don't trust my memory at all.
He wouldn't mind if you called him Alex Loke.
Well, you never know. People can get funny with names.
You never know.
Absolutely. Do you know what I mean? It was handed to them by their parents, for crying out loud. You've got to tread carefully. I remember Emma Thompson seducing him at the end.
I do.
And then when I watched it, that scene's not in there. It's cut out. Very strange. Like maybe they shortened it for, I don't know, duration on TV. They just thought, she's trying to seduce Stephen Fry and was turned away because he reveals he's homosexual. And then, why do you need more Alex Loke time on the screen?
Low.
Now I'm going to call him Loke. Lovely. Not a problem. Not a problem. I'll navigate this.
Did you enjoy it when you watched it?
Yes, very much so. Absolutely. It was just very, very relatable, this idea of putting together this kind of... is it like... It's just after New Year or is it Christmas? It's like that part of the year where they come together. Oh, no, it's his birthday, isn't it? It's his birthday. Landmark time is his birthday. And it's all about nostalgia. And obviously Stephen Fry, Peter, has got it in his head. It's going to be an amazing moment bringing all his friends together. And it just crumples in his hands. And I think that's very, very relatable. And it's a good old chatty, dialogue-driven adult drama, isn't it? Sprinkles of comedy, but underneath some proper drama. It's what would be on HBO today as a miniseries. But that element of being stuck in nostalgia and projecting that perfect evening with your friends, but them coming with their own ideas and their own inclinations of what they want to do, is very human and very real. I mean, that's a trap we all fall into. I sometimes find myself falling into that trap before it's happening. And I'm like, Dave, don't daydream what the evening's going to be like. You'll just disappoint yourself. But you're so seduced by the daydream, you start planning it out in your head. And I remember there's great shots of Stephen Fry sat there trying to start conversations that he'd imagine they'd talk about, and then just dropping it and wanting to talk about other stuff, like, I don't know, their new LA swimming pool or who they're dating now. People come with their own agenda, don't they? That's why Christmases are so stressful.
David, please don't shake your coffee when the guests are. It looks like you're masturbating off camera.
Thank you for that once again. You know, absolutely. Simple as, you know, and I'll say to him, I was going to say something very rude then, which is horrific.
I mean, I don't like saying that word, to be honest with you. I didn't know how to say word.
No, you said it like an NHS doctor. You didn't use Cockney builder language. You used proper street lingo. And it's an activity I don't want my podcast image linked to.
No.
And it's simple as that. Simple as it really does just taint the whole Rupert's friends. Not Rupert's, Peter's friends. Well, God, I've really lost my way now.
Well, I guess we're all Rupert's friends, aren't we?
But absolutely. That's why he's gone down as like a franchise that's never stopped. Rupert, are you talking about Rupert Bear?
No.
Rupert Magendie. I'd like to be a friend, certainly. It's me.
I would say you are.
Absolutely. I didn't get a Christmas card through the post. I'm not being
critical. Do people send Christmas cards now?
They don't, and I didn't send one to him.
That's exactly.
You know, you've got to meet people halfway.
Yeah. Why don't you start the tradition?
Absolutely. I'll send... Yeah, why not, for crying out loud? I need to... start. I can't get that coffee shaking wrist action out of my head. That would have looked like that. Me with a massive smile, shaking my Nescafe into the desk.
Alex, David is here.
Wonderful stuff.
Hello. It looks like I'm wearing dark glasses. I've got some new glasses. Unfortunately, they've got the React Light Rapide in them.
Oh, you went like this. Another podcast.
I'm embarrassed about the glasses.
No.
Not at all. Are they? They're not just sunglasses for hypnosis, then. They're also kind of.
The hypnosis doesn't come into it. They are new ones, but I didn't know they had the reactor light repeat.
Oh, I see. In it. Right, yes, 100%.
So if it's fine like this, it's quite good for your eyes, but you do end up looking like Mr. Bronson from Grange Hill when it goes kind of half tinted.
Did he have tinted glasses?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. It's sort of brownish.
Did he?
Yeah.
He's gone now. Bronson.
What are you thinking? Bullet Baxter? Who were you thinking of?
I think I was the PE teacher.
Yeah, no, Bronson was that. You'll remember him with the slightly tinted glasses.
Yeah, Michael Sheard.
Of course, naturally.
You were on Grange Hill, weren't you? Didn't you do a one?
I did, thank you. Yes, I...
Absolutely.
I did... When I was a boy, I went up for the audition. I went in with... Do you remember Jonah?
Hang on a minute, Absolutely. Alex. Yeah. You can't throw this into the air.
What's that?
Well, I could spend an hour on this.
Yeah, I went up for it, Grange Hill, when I was about 12 or 13. And I went in with Jonah, who was Zamo's mate. And
he's a good-looking lad. I used to like his shoes.
And
just say no.
I think I was a bit too middle-class. You know, so I didn't...
Hang on a minute. How did you get in... I used to look at... Grange Hill going, how are you part of that game?
Well, I had a child agent. You know, I was a child actor.
Never really. What did you do as a child actor? What stuff did you do?
I did the Adrian Mole cassettes when Adrian Mole first came out. Yeah.
You were Adrian Mole?
I was Adrian. It was just me reading the...
Yeah, but that's still a big deal, him doing the diary.
It was great. And I did another thing.
How much are you making, Alex, as a little...
Not was very... on Radio 4.
Yeah, not... Well, Mike Reed used to play on The Breakfast Show on Radio 1 of a morning. And I'd be going, surely I'm owed some money for this. And I spoke to my agent. Yeah, but I did not a great deal. And I did Another Country, the play in the West End, which then became the film with Kenneth Branagh and Rupert Everett. Which
is... that's how you met Kenneth Branagh.
That's right,
then,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
This is lovely.
I was 14.
Honestly... This is lovely.
And Adrian Mole is interesting, isn't it, of that period? I can't see it as being as big now. Do you know what I mean? It's quite
It was so charming, you know, that sort of... I don't know whether... Well, I'm sure... I've had teenage kids myself, but they... that sort of lovely musings of a teenage...
Oh, I loved it. Yeah,
and then I did Another Country, and I did a show called Theatre Box on Thames TV. And then I did Mansfield Park for the BBC, you know, which was a costume.
How old were you when you did all this?
I was 13, 14, 15.
What were your mates saying?
There was inevitably a lot
King of the school?
No, there was inevitably a lot of, that's acting. You know, of course, when you're 13, 14, 15, that's not a particularly popular thing to do, at least...
I thought it would be popular. I thought on the TV, do you know what I mean? What was Theatre Box? That rings a bell. Was it like a play?
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah, that's right. And do you remember Charlotte Coleman? She was in one. Marmalade Atkins. Do you remember Marmalade Atkins?
Yes, I do.
So that was was sort of the pilot for that was on Theatre Box. And we were in a Christmas one. Charles Dickens with Patrick Malahide. And... So, yeah, it was a series of sort of, you know, kids' dramas. And it was all, you know, beautifully done and beautifully written and lovely composed music. So it was like a mini play. That was the theatre element of it, I suppose.
God, so when you did go on to Grange Hill, you were older.
Oh, yeah, I was in my late 20s, early 30s or something.
Were you a parent or teacher?
No, I tell you what it was. It was during that time when... Grange Hill did issues. It was a sort of different issue. You couldn't just have a great story. It was like one week it was homosexuality. Next week was we don't want no school uniforms. Next week, pollution.
proper BBC filling their remit.
A bit. I mean, they do a little bit of that stuff now, but you know, really, it's like, oh right, I get it. And I played an eco warrior with my friend Candida Gubbins, and we were sort of, you know, staking out this place, and some young. Do you remember Danny, what was his name? Who was the guy who was the sort of revolutionary back in the day in the early?
Oh, he was Liverpool, wasn't he? Wasn't he from Liverpool?
That little bloke, Danny, I think he...
Yes, he had the swimming pool. They gave him the opportunity to do the artwork in the swimming pool.
That's right, but he was always a bit kind of right on. And what was he?
Yeah, Danny, definitely.
Danny something. But he...
Danny Kendall.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good memory.
So that's right. And Bronson always used to say, Kendall! But,
You were in Grangefield during the Gonch years, Gonch Gardner years.
No, a little bit after that. I was in a Martinez. What's his name? Martinez. You know who was the
Oh yes, yeah, Francesca Martinez.
Francesca Martinez.
Yeah.
So she was in it, but we were sort of eco warriors. It's so funny actually. All the things I've done, I've always wanted to ask about Grangefield. It was only 2 or 3 episodes of that.
It's a big deal. Were the kids well behaved?
Yeah, I think so. I don't remember anything else other than that. Yeah.
Naughty children.
Absolutely naughty children. So they weren't divas, because they would have been quite big, wouldn't they? You know, they'd have been on Looking Magazine, Smash Hits.
Of course. I don't know about in those days. I mean, this was in the early 2000s. Mm. But, I mean, I tell you, my friend, Lizzie Roper, she talking of Baddie Day.
Oh, I know Lizzie Roper. Yeah.
Yeah, she was saying about some of the people she worked with on Hollyoaks being so badly behaved, and she couldn't believe it, sort of leaving, you know, the costume, running around going, well, where's your jacket? Oh, I left it upstairs. I just went for a cup of tea. Well, can you go and get it? Well, can we turn over? Oh, people running around. And she said, I couldn't believe the unprofessionality of, you know.
Yeah. Oh, my God, kids today.
Kids today. I mean... In those days, I was so keen to
impress.
You know, not get on anyone's nerves more than anything. Not be told we don't really like working with you. You better go home. There's no way I would have been like leaving me jacket upstairs or being late for rehearsals or something. You know.
So you get the vibe of Hollyoaks, they probably haven't learnt their lines, because if she doesn't give a damn about a jacket, do you know what I mean? Basic continuity. It's a case of, you know.
I think there is.
Too much too soon.
Yeah, I think you probably think, oh great, I'm going opening faces in Chigwell or whatever for there, you know. Yeah, I've arrived. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's all, that's just something I heard from an actress.
Let's just be careful what we say.
Let's just be careful.
So you met Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah.
So how older was he? 10 years older than you?
I think I've got a feeling he was probably about 8 years older than me. Yeah, and we did Another Country.
So how old were you when you?
I was 13 when I auditioned for it.
Was he directing it?
No, but he played the lead character Judd with Rupert Everett. And Rupert Everett was, of course...
Oh, Rupert Everett.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And Rupert Everett was in the film, of course, Another Country, with Colin Firth. But it was one of those things where, they were all... Of course, it's all about public school, sort of based on Eton or Harrow in the 1930s. And I was this comprehensive schoolboy, and so I was always being picked up on Alex, A-E-I-O-U, A-E-I-O-U. And so, you know, constantly, there was no way you could get away with dropping your H's and sounding like a, you know, suburban comprehensive schoolboy, which is what I was. But it was a steep learning curve. And when I first started rehearsals, I just found it, oh God, it was really overwhelming. And they were all very sort of posh, it seemed to me.
Early 20s.
Yeah, and they were very badly behaved. I remember Rupert Everett, I hope this is not libelous, it did happen. I remember when we sort of started doing the thing, I remember him, my dad was, or mum and dad would be my chaperone at the Queen's Theatre in Shaftesbury Avenue. And I would sort of, you know, God, I think about my poor dad, you know, we'd be down there chatting to the stage doorman who was, you know, about football or watching the telly at the stage door. I remember Rupert Everett coming down and saying to me, Alex, try this. And it was sort of a glass of red wine. And I went, oh, it's warm. So it's meant to be, you common cunt.
Oh, my God.
And I just remember it was that sort of slightly, you know,
passive-aggressive.
Yeah, that sort of...
passive-aggressive.
Humorous, but not.
Surely.
Aggressive, yeah.
Absolutely.
But and it was all, you know, it was all a bit overwhelming. But a steep learning curve, you know, you go in the West End night after night after night as a 14-year-old, and you sort of...
Yeah. Within that slightly toxic environment, did you and Kenneth Branagh kind of bond then? Because he obviously remembered you.
Yeah, and he was... And I've always thought this. He's a sort of lovely, normal,
aww,
bit like me, lower middle class, suburban bloke. And we were great mates. And talking of leaving your jumper and leaving your costume, I used to sort of... there was a scene in the play where he used to leave his jumper on the bench. There was a bench on the stage. And I think he probably did it deliberately, because I would sort of rush up to his dressing room. Ken, you left your jumper. Oh, God, thank you so much. God. And it was always a lovely kind of bonding thing. And we talk about football and stuff.
Oh, this is lovely.
And I've always thought that, you know, he you know, in the 80s, you see that Spitting Image and stuff was always about Ken and M and the Loveys. And I always thought, well, he's not really like that at all. He'd sort of send that up. But he's just a normal bloke who went to RADA and, you know, a bit of a grafter, really.
Was he,
you know,
impressive? Was he an impressive man?
Yeah, I've always found him very impressive, and he really helped me out. You know, he's one of the few people who's ever thrown me a rope as an actor. I can name, well, the two main people, him and PK, are sort of the two people who sort of, you know, helped me over the years. And just...
Who was the first one?
Kenneth Branagh and Peter Kay, you know. But
Peter Kay,
yeah, but I would say, you know, but honestly, he was really great, Ken Branagh. And
and there's a big gap there, isn't there, from like 13 to 23 or 22. So you kept in contact for the decade.
Well,
or the film.
The things like my GCSE drama, you have to do a bit of writing about the stage, and I asked him to fill in a sort of interview about what it was like performing in another country, which I've got here somewhere. I got loads of stuff which I can't find, unfortunately, but you know, I did an interview with him. And then when I was at Leicester Polytechnic doing my terrible degree in drama, there was a sort of secondment thing where you'd be seconded, you know, you had to find somewhere to go and work. I remember going to see him and saying, look, can I come to Renaissance Theatre Company and spend some time with you? And he said, we're not really operating during that time. And I kept in touch with him. Then I'll quickly tell you this lovely thing if you've got time. When I went to the Edinburgh Festival in 1990 with the National Student Theatre Company, in the days when the Edinburgh Festival, you could sort of do this sort of thing where it wasn't so prohibitively expensive and everyone, you know, just like a massive trade show. It was slightly smaller. And he was there with Emma Thompson and Renaissance Theatre Company. And I planned it out. It was like a kind of dream that it came true. And I was going to ask him. My dad cut out something from the newspaper saying he will be up there at the King's Theatre doing whatever it was, Henry V or something. And I knew I was going to be at the Assembly Rooms doing The Hypochondriac, which was, you know, Molière play. And I went to see him. I said, look, would you come and see my show? And he said, yes. And get me two tickets, one for me and one for Emma Thompson. I was thinking, this is my opportunity.
Wow.
And I turned up to do the show, and the show started and the lights came out, and we were sort of all there. Minimalist. In those days, we had no money. You know, you had to... You didn't pay for your degree in those days. So there was no money, and it was just us sort of actors on the stage. And from the stage, it was sold out, but from two empty seats.
Oh, my
Ken
God.
And Emma. And I was just there thinking, they haven't turned up. And I was so disappointed. And then afterwards, I found a letter from Emma going, we got waylaid, see you tomorrow. I've bought two tickets. And they came to see the show, and this is how great the guy is. I went to see him afterwards. And he said, what are your plans when you finish, you know, doing this? And I just graduated with my worthless degree in drama. And I said, well, someone's talked about doing some TIE, theatre and education, at Birmingham Rep. And he said, OK, well, that's great. But you never thought of joining the RSC or the National or us, for example? Like, yeah, I'd love to do that. And so he said, well, look, we're doing Uncle Vanya a year from now. I'd love you to be involved in it. A small part and understudying. And he said, I'm going away to do Dead Again. Do you remember the film Dead Again?
Yeah. Early 90s.
And he said, what's your immediate problem? I said, well, I really need an agent. He said, okay, this is my number in LA. These are the people we recommend. Any problems? This is in the days of reverse the charges and I'll sort you out an agent. Come to me next April. It was like, overnight, it had gone.
Oh, my God.
So it was brilliant, really.
And, you know, he's still really iconic now, don't get me wrong, but that is an incredible person in the industry to have looking after
you. It's so great. And he didn't have to do that. And he sort of knew instinctively as an actor all the things I needed. You know, this degree where, you know, there was no showcase or anything. It was a kind of awful. I mean, it was just so underfunded and terrible. And we had nothing. We had the National Student Theatre Company where, you know, they would put on shows for you. But it was not like you come out of RADA and there's all these bloody agents queuing up. And so for him to kind of do that and then, you know, and then after we did Uncle Vanya, we did some Shakespeare plays for Radio 3 and it was like Gielgud and this one and that one. I'm thinking, Lester Polly. Yeah, all the greats, you know, Jacoby, Dench.
You performed
Judy
with
Dench,
them.
Derek Jacobi, Sue Pollard, Cole Hellman, and me. And I worked with Gielgud. I kid you not, I worked with Gielgud three times before 1992, in the years leaving drama school.
Start thinking, this is all going to kick off, and it feels very nice indeed?
This is the really strange thing. I did an episode of Minder, right, in about 1990, and Gareth Marks, you know, Alfred Marks's son, he was there, and he said to me, I said, I'm going to go and work with Kenneth Branagh's company, and he said to me something that stuck in my mind. I thought this is just sour grapes or something, but it was so true. He went, oh dear, the problem is you are going to assume it's going to be this easy from now on. And I thought, what are you talking about? And it's right. It's sort of, I did four films in my first 4 years of being an actor and then nothing happened. Absolutely no progression. No, nothing.
Were they Kenneth Branagh films that you did?
Yeah, three of them. I did Peter's Friends, Much Ado About Nothing in the same year. And then I did, I also worked with Gielgud. I sort of stood in for John Gielgud in a film called Swan Song, which he won. They won an Oscar for short film and they were nominated with Richard Briers. And then I did a film called Haunted with Anthony Andrews and Kate Beckinsale and Aidan Quinn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which was a kind of horror film, which I still think was a great horror film, and it just came and went.
I mean, talking about people who have like kind of inspired you and stuff, obviously Peter Kay and Kenneth Branagh, are you still in contact with Branagh now? Is there still some kind of...
His very good friend, Michael Maloney, you know him from Truly Madly Deeply, Mike. He's a great mate of mine. And occasionally, when Kenneth Branagh has his tickets for Tottenham, he has a corporate thing at Tottenham Hotspur, Mike and I go on Ken's ticket, and have it. Oh, the largesse. It's so lovely. And so that, so
champagne, oysters and football.
Oh, my God, it's so lovely. It's so lovely.
Except do you want a bit of that world every week?
I would love that. Yeah, we were there the other week on Ken's ticket. And I said, no, so what happened was they come round with all the fine wines.
Wow.
And then they said, sir, what would you like for half time? And Mike went, no, I'll just have a cup of tea. And I said, yeah, I'll just have a cup of tea, please, cup of tea. So had a few drinks. You sit out there. It's quite nice watching football when you've had a couple of drinks on these lovely padded warm seats that warm up. They're sort of
heated. It sounds amazing. Yeah. It sounds like Nirvana. Yeah. Sounds like Better My Flat.
You come back in at halftime and there's sausage rolls and all that. And sure enough, there was a cup of tea. But the booze was on the table as well. So as you're talking, it's one of those where they're pouring. You're talking to Mike and, you know, there's this booze being topped up and you don't notice. So I had the tea, then I had the booze, then I had some champagne, then I had some red wine. By the end of the match, and we were one of the last people to leave after we'd spoken to Gary Mabbutt, as we were leaving, was like a comedy Charlie Chaplin drunk, hanging onto lampposts. Like, it was like a nightmare. And I got to Tottenham Hale Station and it was like, I'm not going to get home, hanging on to things. And I got off. I got off at Bushey Station, and I was sick at 55 years old.
Oh, there you go. Just as, I wasn't expecting that, Chris.
No, just as some of my neighbours got off the train and went, oh, it's Alex Lowe. And I had to go, I love Boo Boo. I love Boo Boo. So, occasionally.
Alex, can we talk about Peter's friends, please? I can't believe, I bloody love Fry & Laurie.
Okay.
So when Peter's friend came out, very excited young man.
Yes.
The fact that you were in it, hobnobbing.
Okay. Yes, definitely.
This is what you will love, right? I was living.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I was living in Leytonstone. Do you know the actor Jimmy Yule? He was in Wycliffe. Jimmy Yule. He's a sort of Scottish actor, big red beard. Right. And he's Ken Branagh's, one of Ken Branagh's best mates.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And I was living, he was my landlord, and I got this from when I was working with Renaissance, in Leytonstone, in Ferndale Road, Leytonstone, just where Jonathan Ross, I think Jonathan Ross was brought up at the end of the street there. And every morning, you will love this, Dave, every morning the car would turn up, my driver, and you know, I was like fresh to this stuff, a driver would turn up. But I was always the first to be picked up because it was, you know, in order of seniority so that those older actors can have more of a lie-in. So I'd be picked up at bloody 5 in the morning. And then we would travel to Gibson Square in Islington where we would pick up Stephen Fry.
Oh, my God.
And then we would drive to Tufnell Park where we would pick up Hugh Laurie.
Can we just stop there? God. How old were you, Alex?
24.
You're 24.
And I had those two in the back of the car listening to this stuff. And I always remember one morning, I was listening to all this, and I remember they would say, Alex, how are you? How are you this morning? I said, well, you know, last night I went to see my mate's band and I went to the Mean Fiddler in Harleston and I was late and it got to the end and I missed the last bus. So I had to get a cab and I got a cab to Mile End. Now, when I got to Mile End, I found I didn't have any money. So I had to go to the cash point. The bloke dropped me the cash point and then I only had enough for a certain amount. So then I had to walk the rest of the way and then I got another bus to the thing and it got to the end and Stephen Fry went, lovely story.
Oh my God,
you know, these great wits. Those.
But was it a pleasant moment, though, when he said that?
It was hilarious. Oh, you know, of course it was. Oh, no, absolutely. They would be, you know. And I remember I don't know whether they would say this now, but I always remember Hugh Laurie. I was saying to him, what do you think? What do you think of the script for Peter? What do you think? And he was saying, I just don't know. This might be the biggest mistake ever any of us have ever made. And I just remember thinking at the time, God, you know, that must be the same for any actors, despite their experience. You're always taking a little bit of a plunge and hoping for the best. But they were, oh, my God, the thrill of being with them and Tony Slattery. Yeah, and I'd be listening to all their stuff and... there'll be all sorts of jokes with Stephen Fry and...
Where were they in their career? Was it Blackadder then? So
they were probably... They'd done Fry 90s. And Laurie, hadn't they? They'd done...
Early 90s. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, but I mean...
Brightest Buttons.
Yeah, and funny and friendly to me. And I mean, I remember bumping into Hugh Laurie in Crouch End a few years later. At Santander, you know, going and getting some money out with his passcode. I think he had a motorbike and he took his hat off and he was like, oh, hello, Alex. So friendly and lovely and not starry in any way.
So they weren't cliquey at all in their little...
No, they were lovely. And wow. You know, I remember what was so lovely. I remember Michael Sheen. I went to his party once a few years later and bumped into Stephen Fry. And I said, oh, how are you, Stephen? And he said, oh, all the more happy to see you. And, you know, these little things, you go, these people are my absolute heroes, you know. Oh, and I was only playing this pissy little part and so. I mean, the thing is, the reason I know so much about Peter's friends and the Ken Branagh stuff is that I was there a lot because I used to be his stand-in. So when he was directing, I was there for the whole shoot. Yeah, so I'm the same height and sort of colouring as Ken. So I knew all his lines and had the costume for Peter's Friends to play that character and also to play Benedict in Much Ado About Nothing.
How long was the shoot?
I think probably about 6 weeks for Peter's Friends.
Did you ever relax?
No. And I think this is true of that time and also when I did Much Ado About Nothing with Kenneth Branagh's company. I was so, my parents are so sort of, you know, that kind of Protestant work ethic of you bloody well don't step out of line. Don't be cheeky. Don't get hung over. Don't be pissed. It was absolutely, so, you know, when the people like, bless her, Kate Beckinsale turned up for Much Ado, she was so bloody cheeky and
really
bagging it and sort of cheeky to Denzel Washington. I was like, I've got this all wrong. You know, I wouldn't say boo to a goose. I was like, don't step out of line. It's the last thing you want for people to go, you know what, we might send him home. He's not really up
to
it.
What was Denzel Washington like then at that age? Do you know what I mean? Probably very intense, focused actor.
He was very nice. I thought he was really great. And I always remember, you know, I had a lovely Italian girlfriend then. And Denzel gave me a Durex, which I kept for many years.
Hang on a minute.
Blimey. Goodness me.
Yeah,
because Washington condom.
You aware of how many little gems you're bringing out in this?
Oh, I know. I'm dropping them.
There's so much more I can tell you after this. But, you know, it was kind of lovely. And they were all, everyone.
Lovely French letter.
A lovely French letter. But but I think the thing is, really, you know, you hear these stories about grand actors and all that. The majority, David, I think you agree, the majority of people who are in the arts, maybe, you know, they're kind of nice people. I've rarely met anyone I can't bear. You know, I think most people are pretty nice.
On Peter's Friends, was there an intense nerves? Because you had a few scenes there. I remember when you do your Top Gun monologue and stuff like that.
I mean, I was kind of thrilled to be there. But as I say, I wasn't scintillating company. I was just so nervous.
That's what
about,
I'd be like. Just...
Yeah, and I mean, for example, we, you know, just to go back to Much About Nothing, when we did that a few months later in Italy, there was Robert Sean Leonard, you know, that actor, and he was in Dead Poets Society and all that.
And oh,
he was like a year younger than me, and I remember thinking, why can't I be like that? So confident and chatty and funny. And holding court with everyone and kind of cheeking Ken Branagh and ho-ho and Dickie Byers. And I was like, why can't I be like that? I was like, it's just not the way I was brought up. I was kind of new to the, you know, to doing that sort of stuff. It just wasn't. And I think a lot of the English actors are like that. There's a sort of, you're very aware of the hierarchy and just keep your nose clean. And it's rare enough to be making a British film anyway.
Oh, massively. But what was it like going to the premiere? That must have been a big
deal. Well, the premiere of Peter's Friends was at Hyde Park, that theatre right on the corner, the cinema.
Wow.
I don't even know if it's still there. Maybe it is. Right on the corner of Edgware Road, where it meets Hyde Park Corner. And we went there, and it was great. And at the end, they sort of, you know, God, this makes me sound so pathetic and suburban, but my parents were there and they said, would the car stand up? And you know, you're kind of going, this great, you know, and it was sort of things
amazing.
Like it won like the Evening Standard Film of the Year and all this sort of stuff. I mean, it's easy to take the piss out of Peter's Friends. It's kind of very much of its time.
Oh, not at all. It's aged really well. Do you
think so? Really? I've not seen it.
Yeah, the themes are great. Yeah, I did.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
The nostalgia element, trying to get friends back together, trying to imagine what it would be like in a perfect setting in your imagination doesn't quite meet that.
Yeah.
And the big
yeah.
twist at the end when he says that, you know, he's not well and all that.
Yeah.
I think it worked really well. The thing is with the premiere, I look back at that would have been like early 90s.
Yeah.
The idea of seeing yourself on the big screen.
Oh,
we live
it's
in
great,
a world
that.
Of screens now, don't we?
Yeah.
You see yourself on the silver screen, that must have been a big thing, especially for a young man's ego. Do
it
you know
was,
what I mean? Early 20s.
Oh,
20.
Yeah. God, yeah. I mean, that's... Well, that's always great, isn't it? That it's lovely, and you know, it's got that lovely film element and it's rich sound coming out. So yeah, it was really great. And then we had a kind of lovely party. Yeah, go on. I mean, the other one was Tony Slattery. We were great mates. And it's hard. I mean, you don't, the kids now won't remember, but he was everywhere on the telly at that time. Mm. And he was a kind of mate of mine. And we went out for a drink and he took me to the Cafe Royale to see Jimmy Webb, the, you know, wrote up and away my people blue and all that. And I mean, I remember going to see that with him and Gloria Hunniford coming up. And sort of say hello at the table. I said, you know, he said, no, I don't, I have no idea. I've never met her before in my life. But it was sort of suddenly, oh, here's a celebrity acknowledging another celebrity. I was like, God, is this how it works? I mean, she's just a well-known figure. So are you. I mean, the only thing was I did have my script, my sitcom that I'd written, which he gave a cursory glance to, and it just sat on the table while we watched this thing. And I wanted to keep asking him about what did you think of the this script?
It sounds like quite a bipolar existence where massive highs,
yes,
and then back to normality, musically and daytime TV, and then suddenly you're meeting all these celebrities, then massive.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like that for a lot of.
Oh, I imagine for everyone in the industry. Yeah, I imagine it mirrors
not
everyone.
David Earle. Not David Earle.
What?
Oh, come on!
What?
You're always very busy at some nice high-profile things.
Only because of Ricky. I was saying to Naomi recently, I was like, if it wasn't for him, fuck me.
He's your brand.
He gave me the backing and it sort of helped me along.
Well, when I have seen you doing the Gittins and all that, it is hands down the funniest character act going. I mean, and when you say, oh, remember you say, I don't do it anymore. I don't want to do it anymore. Ever since I've known you, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going back to the gardening or whatever. You know, I can never understand that. That last thing we did at Spiky Mike's, do you remember that Christmas show?
Yeah.
So funny. It was great. My daughter was singing and all
yes.
that.
Yes.
Oh, my Lord.
We just had a great time. But, I mean, honestly, I think, I know, of course, Ricky, you know, has done a lot for you. But, honestly,
He was the only one that gave me opportunities to do that stupid stuff.
Yeah, but you and me have been quite industrious in our own way.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And doing that stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Only because... But that's what I think. I don't think we're not part of a sort of crowd of people, you know.
But I haven't, you know, when it came to stand-up gigs and there would be like a friend, like a little community backstage, I'd fuck off straight away. So I wasn't...
No, but
I wasn't particularly friendly. Not that I was unfriendly, but I just want to go home.
No, but there are... I mean, I do find that now. Even now, I do gigs and I meet people always talking about this producer, have you done that gig? Mm. And all these people I'm supposed to know. And I think, I've been doing this for off and on for about 19 years now.
Yeah.
How do I not know that person? I don't even know who you're talking about. So it is a kind of... That's a very kind of distinct group. And if you are a sort of actor who dips his toe in stand-up, I think it's a different thing, you know.
I just know there's just a big community of stand-ups on the circuit anyway that were just, they seem like they knew each other and were friends. They go to parties together. I never did any of that.
No, me neither.
When we did Brian and Charles, Alex, we were at the Munich Film Festival and I was sat with this producer and he said, you're never, ever going to have it this easy again with this film. I went, what? He said, it never, ever, because we wrote it, did the short, wrote it, made it. He said, it will never happen like that ever again. Oh, and in the 2 years since, I'm like, oh, yeah, it won't ever happen again. That.
Why is that? Why?
I think because we made a short that was a bit different and someone took a little gamble and they just did it. Whereas now, I don't know. I think most films take years and most films don't get made.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Especially now, it's changed so much, isn't it?
Because I was this is easy. Write a script. You made the film.
I mean, with films, with looking at Kenneth Branagh's career, not change the subject too much, but it's a case of with his big movies, I mean, like Frankenstein, what was that like seeing him on bigger and bigger film sets?
Well, I played Seaman number 7 on Frankenstein.
I saw that on IMDb. Yes.
Yeah, and I was asked if I wanted to stand in for Ken again on that.
Oh, wow.
And I remember being at home. I think I was with my now wife going, should I do that? I've done the standing in. There comes a point where you go, you've got to kind of strike out on your own. And I think the money was not as good to stand in. Plus, I was going to have to get myself to Shepperton every day from Crouch End. And right. I sort of said no. And it's probably the right decision because it's freezing cold at Shepperton.
De Niro, where was it there?
De Niro was in it, yeah.
The monster.
Yeah, and I remember going to that, and it was the freezing cold Shepperton in January, and the last time I'd seen Kenneth Branagh and all those people had been Tuscany, you know, doing Much Ado About Nothing, and I thought, actually, I made the right decision. This is a totally different vibe. A much, as you say, much bigger, huge, huge wow. thing in these huge hangars filming. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe I could have done it and it would have been fun for a while. God, you got long enough to, you know, have a career. But I didn't. I went and did some plays instead at regional theatre. So
how long were you on set then? Was it quite impersonal? You
I think
really
we,
see
yeah, we, I didn't see much of him.
De Niro,
and it
De Niro.
Was, I think we did see De Niro. And famously, my friend David, oh, what's his bloody surname? Anyway, he stood in for De Niro. David.
Oh, right.
Oh, God. Anyway, and famously, I think it was Sean Prendergast, the actor, came up, slapped him on the back and said, how are you, you old cunt? And he turned around. It was De Niro. It was the real monster.
Oh, my God. That's a scene out of Extras, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gervais.
Tell you the worst one, when I stood in for Gielgud, this was God. So we did this thing, film Swan Song at the Criterion Theatre in Piccadilly Circus, and I'll never forget this was one of the most awful moments of my life. Me from Leicester Polly, I'd done a lot of Shakespeare over the years, but I'm not really trained, you know, in RADA or anything like that. And Ken Branagh used to have a bloke called Hugh Crutwell as his advisor, who was the head of RADA, who was a kind of old guy who used to speak like this. And I met Hugh on various things, Peter's Friends and Much Ado About Nothing and Swan Song. And I remember Hugh saying to me once, you seem to be quite a hit with the girls and the wardrobe department. What is your secret? And I said, well, I don't know. I don't know. Telling jokes. And he went, telling jokes. Do you know, I don't think I've told a single joke in my life.
Quite amazing.
A very serious sort of, you know, drama practitioner who Ken would go to. But there was this terrible moment standing in for Branagh on Swansea, standing in for Gielgud, where during this thing, it's all about a prompt played by Richard Briers and this old actor written by Chekhov. And so there's great swathes of Shakespeare in this thing. And so Gielgud is there in his sort of bath chair. And they said, would you like Alex to read the off-camera lines?
Oh, my God.
And so I'm there with Hugh Crutwell, the head of RADA, Branagh, Professor Russell Martin, who's a head of expert in Shakespeare, Dickie Briers, Gielgud, all the rest of them, cameramen, lighting. And I was, it was a Sunday morning. I thought, oh, I'm just going to be expected to do camera lighting stuff. And Branagh said, okay, could you read those lines? I was like, oh my God. And it was great swathes of, Romeo and Juliet. I was thinking, oh my God, what a time to have to perform in front of these people. So, you know, they do that thing, turnover, mark it, speed, running, camera, you know, scene three, take one, action. And I got through this speech, and because it was badly typed out, because Gielgud, of course, knows those speeches off the top of his head, and I was like, fucking hell. And I got to the end of this thing, and it's from Romeo and Juliet, and the line is, "And death's pale flag is not unfurled here, not yet unfurled here." And I said, and death's pale flag is not unfurled here. And it got to the end, and Hugh Cropwell, they went cut, and Hugh Cropwell said to me, no, 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 the whole meter should have told you, death's pale flag is not unfurled here. And I thought, what a time to be picked up on your Shakespeare. Gielgud, Branner, you know, Branner, Hugh Cropwell. And I'm like, why didn't I know? I mean, I profess to be this bloody classical actor with Kenneth Branagh's company. No, no, no.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at Hugh Cropwell now. I'm looking at a picture of him.
Yes, he's like that.
He died many, many years ago.
Not long after Swan Song, I guess.
Did you get any feel off the rest of them when you were doing that? Like, God, what's he doing?
No, not really. They were pretty nice. And I think, I don't think it's the worst sin in the world, but I think if you knew your stuff, you would, you know. But I mean, Dickie.
Alex, the whole meter of the thing should have told you.
But I mean, Dickie Bryars, I spent a lot of time with, you know.
What's he like?
So bloody lovely. So lovely, you know.
But I think
Ken Branagh, you know, he attracts those people because he's a nice, normal, lovely guy. And I always remember Richard Bryars, like...
What was Richard Bryars like as well?
Richard Bryars, I'll never forget. This is a terrible moment. When we started doing... I won't tell you that one. That's too awful. But, you know, I used to sit around with him when we did Much Ado and Brian Blessed, you know. Can you imagine? You're sat there listening to endless anecdotes. Endless anecdotes. And really scurrilous stuff. Yeah, and Dickie Bryars with his licorice roll-ups just kind of chortling away on the set in Italy. And you're thinking, it don't get any better than this. But if you are a kind of guy who loves acting and loves the great British actors and cinema actors, you know, they're not cinema actors, they're theatre actors, but, you know, and you'd have Brian Blessed. I shared a villa with Brian Blessed in Italy.
What?
I mean, it was just...
Is he as eccentric in life? Yes, it's exactly what you imagine. When I got in touch
with you, you said, I haven't really got any memories of that time.
Well, it's such a long ago. But Blessed, you know, of course, I shared a villa with him, Richard Clifford, the actor, and Kenneth Branagh's driver. And we were in this lovely villa in Tuscany. And Blessed, you know, if you got talking to him, you could be 3 hours sitting there thinking, how am I going to get away from this? I'm going to back slowly out the kitchen. I can't listen to any more. So, you know, and he's one of these people who's sort of obsessed with big men. I might have told you this before, David. You know, he's obsessed with big men, big boxers, Greek gods.
Oh, my God.
Rush. And I remember him, because he did the voiceover for Sumo in the early 90s on Channel 4.
Did he?
And so I said, oh, yeah, what, do you see a lot of Sumo? And he just break into, Kachatunawa, 6'5", 600 pounds, literally a terrorist. Potakanawa, the salt shaker, they called him. A man, so, and you would get all this monologue. Yeah, all right, Brian. He would get hold of you, right? And he would have you sort of by the buttocks, pulling you down the kitchen. It's like a nightmare, just what you imagine, but worse. You know, I mean,
God, that's amazing, isn't it? If you got in contact with one of these celebrities, and it's just, oh, this is amazing, and then after a while, it's like, no, you're a bit too much.
But we had a dinner party. I know we had a sort of gathering in our villa. And some of the actors were there, and Melda Staunton and stuff. And I never forget, he's one who's slightly bullying, right? Where he would do that thing. You know, people who use you as a prop. So I sat next to him, and he'd say, you know, when I was in Tibet, when I went up Everest without oxygen, the Dalai Lama would be in the street, and he'd get, hold on, and he'd sort of grab hold of me, you know, like that. You're like,
oh, I hate that.
And you're like, do I go with the improvisation, or you want to go, get? Yeah. So you that's why I was not overly confident. It's all a bit, I was sort of not. I was very much. I only had a small part in it. I was a stand-in, so I don't think I was king of the castle. Huh?
When we did Afterlife, I was sat in waiting to sort of do a scene, and I, it sort of dawned on me. I looked over the room. I was like, "It's Peter Egan and Penelope Wilton."
Yeah.
So they're in like my one of my favourite sitcoms. So I thought, "Fuck it, I'm going over there." So like years ago, I wouldn't have done it, and I thought, "No." I went over there and said, "I absolutely love. Can we talk about it?" And they went, "Yeah,
yeah." He was in Uncle Vanya. Peter Egan played Astrov, the doctor, and I was understudying him. So, and he, of course, you know, I knocked around with him and Dickie Briers on tour, you know, listening to their endless cackling. And but he's a massive animal rights guy, isn't he now, Peter Egan?
Lovely man.
Yeah, lovely.
What would you love to do if there was like anything you could do? Is there anything that you'd, any director or genre you just think if you're given carte blanche?
Oh, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know anything really. I honestly am wide open to doing stuff. I'd like to do a really, really funny comedy. I'd like to do, I don't know, anything. I'm not really that fussy. There's nothing particularly where I go, I really want to do that. It's like when people say, who's your favourite comedian? There's so many. David is my favourite character comedian. But you know, stand-ups and stuff is not really, I don't really know. I'm mostly jealous of people anyway, when I see actors.
Oh, aren't we all?
You know, I can't. I mean, many times.
I just wonder how they do it.
Well, how they do the act. Oh, I know. I mean, how I think that about. But people, when they take the piss out of soap opera acts and stuff, say, really? But they're crying, a bloody great big camera in their face, crying in this sort of factory, turning this stuff over factory style, week after week after week. I think you rarely see bad actors now. In the old days, you'd see people. I think everyone's bloody brilliant. Well, Dan Skinner just did EastEnders, and it was very, very quick. He couldn't believe how quick it was. And so much so, he told me that, you know, he was on the set and said, can I get a coffee somewhere? And I think, not that he's expecting a little lackey to go and get it. So I went, yeah, there's a Costa. Just in the lot. He's like, oh, right. So it's not even, I don't think it's like, even like it used to be in the old days. I think it's just churn this stuff over. And if you want to go and get something, you'll have to go and buy it.
Tracy Ann Oberman told me the most amazing bit of EastEnders gossip that I can't say.
Oh, yes. Oh, really? Blimey.
Honestly, it goes on for about 15 mins.
Not about the Leslie Grantham.
Yes.
Thing. Yes, she told me that. It's very funny. You probably could tell that, but...
No, I couldn't tell it like she told me. It was so detailed.
I know. It's a great punchline, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I'm still telling it.
In the changing room.
Is it about the end when he came out of the dressing room and they met face to face?
Goodness me, it's quite different. So... I'll have to find out what that is. Goodness me.
I'll tell you later.
So with like a big feature film type of thing, what that must be just sitting around for ages because every shot is lit like a painting.
Yes, but luckily I was, you know, standing in for Ken Branagh, you know, quite a lot of that time. And then other film stuff I've done. Yes, there is a lot of sitting around, actually. There's a lot of sitting around. And there's a lot of temptation to eat the sandwiches and the bloody cakes that come round.
Oh, I can imagine.
And all that
definitely.
Sort of stuff. Yeah, I mean, I did a film called The Devil Outside, which another one that bloody well came and went. And we were just at this kind of house, like it was all shot in this detached house in Nottingham. It seemed like weeks and weeks on end, hot, always hot, nowhere to sit, really, you know, it went on and on and on. And that was quite boring, just in the sort of cul-de-sac. So, it's always quite nice if you're in a nicer sort of setting. Really.
Alex, I feel like kept you for ages. Yeah, this could go on and on. One last question, Alex. Where was it filmed? Please.
Which one?
Peter's Friends.
Peter's Friends was filmed at Rotham Park in Barnet. Okay. I think it's up Arkley. High Barnet is the nearest tube, I think. But it's up there that sort of feels Rotham Park, where loads and loads and loads of things are filmed. And very often now I see that drawing room where all the Peter's Friends were sat round. And we also filmed Fun at the Funeral Parlour there a few years later.
Wow.
I see I loads
that,
of things.
On Binti Choice. Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
remember
so,
that.
And it was just, you know, such a wonderful, great time. And I really, I'm always so pleased with
one
Kevin.
One more quick.
Great guy. Yeah.
Really quick question. Is Stephen Fry, Hugh Laurie, Tony Slattery, Kenneth Branagh, da, 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 any of them on your phone?
Tony Slattery is, but he has a lady who the number is his name, but you get through to her for various reasons. Ken Branagh, I speak to his assistant, but I'm sure I could get his number by hook or by crook. Stephen Fry is staying at my house at the moment. No, I don't know. Not really.
No.
Not really. Only them. But who else do I know from those days? No, that's about it. Brilliant. All right, guys.
Thank
lots
you
of
so
love.
Much,
thanks
Alex.
For having me.
Cheers,
appreciate
mate.
It.
No, thank
I'll see you
for
speak
coming.
To you Thursday.
Yes, we'll do.
Brilliant.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Take care. Bye. Look after some Alex. Bye. Cheers. Bye. Bye.